Thank you to Cash App for sponsoring this episode.
What Came Next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening.
Ginger Getz is a mother, graphic designer, and co-victim of murder from Kentucky. Since the 2015 murder of her mother and the consequent legal battle to keep her sister imprisoned for the crime, Ginger has made it her life mission to bring awareness to intrafamilial murder and child-to-parent violence. In just over a decade, she has shared her and her mother's story on many different platforms, including television's Evil Lives Here, Deadly Women, Snapped, and more. She does so to honor her mother, Carlene, and to help others who may be navigating similar violence. The Broken Cycle Media team is deeply grateful for Ginger's time, energy, and her shared mission in grief. These episodes are dedicated in loving memory of Carlene Conley.
I told mom that I was not going to leave for a couple days. I was going to stay there. I borrowed a gun from my husband and slept with it under my pillow. Eventually, the weekend's over. I have to go home to my kids, my husband, my job. Mom seems like she's in a better headspace. I think she's relieved she had a reprieve and she's doing better. Give her phone back. First thing that happens is Paige calls, and I was really, really upset and angry that mom had let her come back. I remember talking to mom on the phone and I told her I don't want to get that phone call one day and the police telling me that she's killed you. And I knew in my heart right then and there that I was right. And mom just said in this really, really small voice, "What am I supposed to do? She's my child. I can't abandon my child." It's all just going through my head that mom is going to choose her until she doesn't have a choice anymore. That's when I knew that things were bad and going to get worse. At this point, another year or so has gone by, and she now has a boyfriend that she's been with for a little while, and they seem like they're getting along okay. He's sort of her chauffeur and her maid, but he doesn't challenge Paige in any way as far as her behavior and that sort of thing. So Paige is perfectly happy with him. He is a guy who will step in between Paige and my mom, and he does it frequently. He tries to hold Paige back when Paige is intent on going at my mom. He stepped in and Paige had a knife in her hand, and Paige actually stabbed him in the arm. The police were called. He declined to press charges because he felt like it was an accident that had happened in the heat of the moment. So no charges. Paige is still at the house. She does have to go to court, and the judge tells her she has to attend anger management courses, which of course she's not going to do. She gets off pretty easy. Then there's another instance where he steps between Paige and my mom. She has a knife in her hands again, and this time she cuts his arm pretty bad. The police are called again. So in this particular instance, they did decide to keep her and put her in lockup for a couple of days just until she could calm down. Mom, of course, bails Paige out so that Paige gets to come home. I can't tell you how many times that my mom bailed Paige out in one form or another. these were all starting to snowball. The fighting was getting worse. Paige was getting angrier and more violent. And it seemed like there was always a knife being grabbed and pointed at the boyfriend or my mother. It was a pretty intense period of a couple of months. Mom is not sharing these things. Paige is certainly not sharing these things, nor is her boyfriend. We are kind of oblivious to the fact that all this stuff has been snowballing and potentially getting much, much worse very quickly. Saturday the 14th is the birth date of my middle kiddo. He wanted to celebrate his birthday by going up to a Dave & Buster's and hanging out with a friend, just playing games, that kind of thing. On the flip side, my youngest had been invited to a birthday party down this road from the Dave & Buster's. So my mom offered to take my youngest to that birthday. So I stayed with the boys at Dave & Buster's. They played games, we ate burgers, just kind of hung out, had a good time. Whereas mom and my youngest were at like a trampoline kind of a place. A lot of kids running around, playing on them and doing what little kids do at a birthday. We had driven up together. She had dropped me and the boys off and then taken my van to take my little one to the birthday party that she was going to. Mom came to pick us up. We're driving back home. The kids are in the back being kind of rowdy and stuff. Mom and I are just chit-chatting and enjoying each other's company. I mentioned to her, your lease is up soon on your Honda. What do you think you're going to do? Are you going to buy the car? Are you going to get another lease? She just kind of looked at me funny and said, yeah, I don't think I'm going to be needing a car much longer. I did not understand that at all. So I just sort of was like, okay, and moved on to the next topic. The drive home's like half an hour. And it's just literally things like, have you watched any good shows lately? Just stuff like that. Mom came into the house to have a slice of birthday cake, just enjoying each other's company. We weren't technically celebrating the birthday until the following day because we always combined my son's birthday with Paige's. It was simpler to have one dinner than two. And then she asked, as she's heading out the door, if she could have a piece of cake to take home to Paige, which I was very begrudgingly providing because I just didn't really want to give Paige a piece of cake, which is ridiculous, but that's, I guess, a sister thing. She kisses and hugs us all goodbye and tells us she loves us, calls my oldest daughter down from upstairs where she's in her room and gives her a hug and a kiss and tells her she loves her. And mom leaves and goes home to her house, which is 5 minutes away. My understanding of what happened after that was given by the police officers. Basically, they told me that mom went to the store again to get some more ingredients that she had forgotten for the dinner for the next day. I think it was things like salad and garlic bread, things like that. She came home, was preparing everything. Then Paige comes from the basement, discovers that mom has made lasagna instead of what she wants, and she's very angry. She goes to the grocery. She gets things to make chicken salad. She comes home and she and mom get in an argument because mom thinks that Paige has hit the garage door with her car. Paige is saying that no, she did not hit the garage door with her car. They just snap at each other back and forth. Paige is still super, super angry about the fact that mom is not making what she wants for dinner. And my understanding is that then they got in an argument about Paige's dog. Paige wanted to let him out, and mom said, don't let him out because I'm cooking. I don't want him underfoot. Paige got angry about the fact that mom was keeping her dog in the crate when he should have been allowed to be free. then my understanding from that point is that Paige hit Mom in the head with a dog bowl, although Paige claimed later in court that it was Mom that hit her with it. And then it escalated from there. I think they just started slapping, and then Paige grabbed the knives and the knife block. She actually ended up hitting Mom in the head with the knife block next. My understanding from the autopsy later on is that knife block was actually what killed Mom, which in looking back, I'm happy that she was able to pass away quickly, because Paige then proceeded to stab Mom 79 times and to bite her numerous times all over her body. Paige got tired and went downstairs and took a nap after she killed Mom. My memory serves that she then came back upstairs a couple hours later, saw that Mom was dead on the floor. Blood was everywhere. Blood was all over Paige, all over her hands, her face, her arms, her shirt. She started to panic a little bit. She calls 911, tells them that somebody has broken into her house and killed Mom. They are unable to understand her because she is very high or drunk when she makes the phone call, so she's slurring her words. She hangs up. The 911 operator calls her back again. Paige answers, and this time says that trick-or-treaters or somebody like that broke into the house and killed Mom while she was downstairs sleeping.
Thank you again to Cash App for sponsoring this episode. As a small business owner, reliable payment methods that have built-in protection are a must. And in my opinion, Cash App is the best. But if you weren't up to speed already, Cash App is way more than just a safe way to send and receive money. With the Cash App card, you unlock a ton of perks without all the hidden fees. Enjoy benefits like exclusive early access to nationwide concert presales, Kendrick Lamar and Sabrina Carpenter, to name a couple recent examples, plus discounts on everyday purchases and popular brands you're probably already spending money on. Add your card to your digital wallet to make your money moves easier. Cash App also adds security to your money by declining suspicious card transactions and sending you a notification to make sure the payment is really you. If your card is ever lost or stolen, you can also lock it with just one tap right in the app. Spend with confidence with the Cash App card today. New Cash App customers can earn $10 if they use the code CASHAPP10 in their profile at signup and send $5 to a friend within 14 days. Terms apply. Download Cash App today and make your money work for you. Visit Cash App's link in bio. Cash App is a financial services platform, not a bank. Banking services provided by Cash App's bank partners. Prepaid debit cards issued by Sutton Bank, a member FDIC. Cash App Visa debit flex cards issued by Sutton Bank, member FDIC, and the Bancorp Bank N.A., pursuant to a license from Visa USA, Inc. See terms and conditions for the Sutton prepaid card, Sutton debit flex card, and Bancorp debit flex card. Cash App Green features savings, direct deposits, roundups, overdraft coverage, and discounts provided by Cash App, a Block, Inc. brand. Visit cash.app/legal/podcast for full disclosures.
The police arrive on the scene. Paige proceeds to tell the police that there's four or five little blonde girls who are coming to the door, trick-or-treating. It's March, so all of that is completely improbable. And then she changes her story and says that she owes her drug dealer some money, and so then he may have come by. Mom had maybe let him in, and he killed Mom in response to Paige owing him money. Turns out that wasn't true either. Since they know that there are supposed to be people who have escaped this house and have murdered someone, they block off the whole area with dozens of police cars. They go door to door. They go all over the woods. Meanwhile, a couple of the officers are going through the house, determining that there is no unlocked doors, no unlocked windows. There's no way somebody could have gotten in. And of course, if they had all just seen Paige from the get-go, they would have known that it was Paige who had murdered my mom. The detectives finally arrest Paige and take her to the police station in order to start debriefing her and getting all the information they're able to from her. Mom was deceased for a couple of hours by this point, and it is now well past midnight, and it is now Paige's 37th birthday. So she has now made it memorable to everybody, including herself, and she spent it in handcuffs. About 6 a.m., the officer who was assigned the duty of notifying next of kin shows up at my house. I came downstairs and opened the door, and the first thing I said was, "What has she done this time?" The officer says, "Can I please come in? You're going to want to sit down." He proceeds to tell me and my eldest daughter that Paige has been arrested for killing my mom. I am shocked, not surprised, because I predicted that was going to happen. I do ask where Paige is, if there's any other details that he can give me. And at that time, there was not much that he could provide other than Paige had been arrested. The gentleman leaves. I call my husband, who actually has been out of town. He's about 2 hours away, so he packs all his stuff, jumps in the car, starts heading home. And then I call my older sister and alert her to the fact that Paige has now killed Mom. She is breaking down on the phone. I'm breaking down on the phone. It's horrific. I have to call my mom's baby sister. They were very, very close. I have to tell her. And then I can't face calling or telling anybody else anymore that day. I have been informed that the house has already been cleared and released back to the family, which is something that surprised me because I didn't know that that could happen that quickly. But I guess they felt like they had gotten enough photos of everything to provide the evidence required for the whole trial. When my husband gets home, I tell him I need to go over to my mom's house. He tries to talk me out of it, but I tell him that I have to have something of Mom's to have and hold. So he and my daughter drive me over to Mom's. They do not come in. We had no idea what we would be facing. I go in alone through the garage and into the kitchen, where there is just ungodly amounts of blood everywhere. That's something that I never knew, was that when someone is murdered, the police, they don't clean that up for you. That is something that you have to hire someone to do, or you have to clean it up yourself. No one informs you that you are going to have to clean this up. I'm averting my eyes as best I can because I just can't think about that right now. So I go up to Mom's room and I find the sweater that she was wearing the day before, and it still smelled like her, of course. So that's what I decided I had to take, and went back out to the car with her jewelry box and the sweater and went home. I couldn't really eat. I couldn't talk. I just was numb. My older sister decided that she would fly in. So she arrived that night after I had been in the house, and we went over to the house together. She's an oncology nurse, so she deals with a lot of things that are very hard all the time. She volunteered to clean up all the blood and everything all over the kitchen. Her hands were numb afterwards for days. I really wish there was some way that I could start a company based on donations or whatever to clean the houses when something happens in your home. My job was to just kind of go through things and try to find Mom's most current will, anything that we knew the police might need, that kind of stuff. We then went to the police station and dropped off anything and everything we thought that they might want. There was computers, there's a laptop, a couple iPads, I think Paige's phone, Mom's phone. I just wanted them to have everything they would need to make sure that it was going to be as airtight as could be. So my sisters here in town, my aunts are all driving up from their various places. My mom's sister and niece drove up from where they live in South Carolina. My dad's youngest sister and one of her daughters, who I'm very close with, drove up to help out. We decided to hold a wake instead of doing anything at a church or any of that kind of stuff, because I just felt like it was more personal that way. Everybody gathered and we just all sat around and talked about Mom. We did meet with the prosecuting team while my sister was still there that week. They basically just gave us the guidelines of what we could expect until trial started. And then we were assigned the victim advocate, who, if you're not familiar, is the person who is supposed to be kind of like your go-to when you have questions. So met all of them. We talked about what was going to happen over the course of the next couple of months, because we thought for sure that this was not going to take long to go to trial. Then our assigned lawyer ended up getting pregnant and she dropped out. And then we were assigned another lawyer. And then something happened. And then we were assigned a third set of lawyers in the course of a year. She was in the county jail for a year before we even went to trial and to start the whole actual process of prosecuting Paige. I was informed that I would not be able to be in the room while they were doing the trial because they asked me if I would actually testify, which I was more than happy to say I would, because I was the only one who interacted the most with Mom and Paige and had seen things go down for a number of different instances. So I was not able to be in there. Paige's trial actually was slated to begin on March 15th of 2016. It took exactly a year to the day before we were able to have the trial. So for Paige's 38th birthday, she was in court. My mom's sister came back for the trial. My dad's baby sister and her husband came back for the trial. My sister flew in with her husband for the trial. Everybody who was anybody family-wise was there in the actual court, except for my father and I. That Monday, the 15th of March, 2016, the court opened and they started doing all the jury selection, narrowing it down to whoever they felt like would be the best jury. Paige, of course, is in there. All of our family's in there except for me. All of them are taking copious notes because they know that I will probably have lots of questions. The actual trial begins that afternoon. They bring out Detective Richmond, who was the guy who was in charge of questioning Paige after she was arrested. He proceeded to walk everybody through questioning her. He brings up the fact that Paige, during her questioning, actually stole a pen off of the table and hid it down her pants. We all didn't know if this was because she was going to try to stab herself, stab somebody else to escape. It was just very, very odd that she stole a pen. They proceed to question all of the officers who were on site and that all had the body cameras. They all talked about the fact that they were all searching the neighborhood, looking for these little girls who supposedly had rung the doorbell and shouted trick or treat. All of their backup camera was shown in order to give a better picture of how things were going on, and things were a little crazy that evening. The prosecuting team wanted to submit these knife attacks as escalation prior to Mom's murder, and they were not allowed to do so. So we could not show any previous issues that were similar at all. The trial lasts 7 days. I am brought in the day before the last day as a character witness for my mom. I was not there to in any way answer questions about Paige's behavior. I guess they had decided ahead of time that really they just wanted me to come in and talk about how wonderful my mom was. So that's what I did. I told him that she was my best friend, that we liked to do crafts together and hang out and liked similar TV programs. I just enjoyed her. She was a very, very dear friend to me. It was pretty short and sweet, no cross-examination at all. Then I was released, and then I was allowed to go sit in the general audience of the trial. So I was there when the doctor who had been doing all of Paige's mental health screenings at the jail, a lot of talking about the fact that there's really nothing wrong with Paige except she self-subscribes medication and alcohol, and none of that was really necessary. Last day, which is the following day, we expect it to be kind of a long day because it's one of those times where they just do their summaries and talk about all the different highlights of the case. Then the jury is released to go back and do all their deliberation. And we all kind of thought, well, we'll hang out and everybody will give us a call when they come back. But we didn't expect an answer or anything in a day or two. But it was less than 3 hours. They called us all back in because they had reached a verdict.
In most U.S. states, the sentencing judge generally determines and imposes the sentence for a person convicted of a felony. Only 6 U.S. states allow juries to decide non-capital felony sentencing under certain circumstances. Those states are Arkansas, Kentucky, Missouri, Oklahoma, Texas, and Virginia. In Kentucky specifically, after a jury finds a defendant guilty of a felony, the jury determines the punishment within a statutory range, subject to the trial judge's authority under Kentucky law.
They decided to give Paige 27 years for mom's death, not to life or anything, just a straight up 27 years. We were all disappointed because we all wanted Paige to get life. We were very unhappy with the fact that we felt like they didn't really look at all that mom had been through her whole life. But then again, they couldn't have known. We can kind of start to move on in our lives. I can remember every time Paige got moved from one jail to another, we would get a phone call and they'd be like, an inmate of thus and such number has been released from our care. The first couple times I got them, I had an absolute meltdown because I thought that she was released. The first time it happened, I was hysterical and I called and they're like, oh no, honey, that just means that she's out of our care and in somebody else's care. I'm like, well, you guys need to reword that because it's like an automated message because you scared the crap out of me. Hopefully we don't have to deal with Paige anymore. And that's what we thought. We did a couple of TV spots because the news, they're all there because it's become a fairly big deal in the area. Do a couple just real quick interviews. And then everything just sort of dies down for a while until we receive notice that Paige has submitted to the Supreme Court of Kentucky that she wants a retrial. And this is maybe 2 or 3 years into her sentence at this time. The Supreme Court hears the case, the arguments, and agrees with her. Because apparently the psychiatrist who was on the stand that day after me, not only was the psychiatrist for the prosecution, but also for the defense. And they should have been 2 completely separate doctors. The court did not give money for Paige to get a separate evaluation. So The Supreme Court of Kentucky decided that they would give Paige a retrial based on that information. My older sister and I are stunned because the last thing anybody wants to do is go back and have to do it all again. There's all the what ifs. What if this time they find her not guilty? What if she's set free? On the flip side, there was also the what if that maybe if they did go to a retrial, that she would finally get life. But it was a gamble that we did not feel like we could take. So we offered Paige a plea deal. It was for 20 years. So now she's chiseled a couple of those years away. So now she only has like 15 years left to serve. She got credit for time served. Paige will be eligible for parole in 2032. My daughter and I, and probably my sister, will all either be there or make sure that we are heard by the parole board because I want her to serve every single minute of that 20 years. I think she got off easy with 20 years. Hopefully, if we make enough noise between a couple of us, that she will not be granted parole. They usually say that they're not granted parole the first time anyway, but I still intend to be there or be noisy in whatever way I can. If she never gets parole, then she would be out without any question in 2036. We were disappointed, but grateful that we don't have to go through it all again. But then we all start to get nervous because all of a sudden it doesn't seem like it's nearly long enough away. I was approached by a program about 2019. All that kind of stuff seemed to be happening about the same time. I was approached about giving an actual interview and having my interview be part of an episode of a program called Facing Evil about Paige and about her relationship with Mom and how I saw everything. I was not going to do it. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, I want to do it, if only to kind of help myself heal a little bit. And if I could educate somebody out there about the fact that my sister was abusing my mom and that that's a thing, then I will have served my purpose. The film crew came into town. They rented a little conference type room at a hotel, and I was there for most of the day. I was on Facing Evil, and then they kind of took some of the excerpts of that and the B-roll and then applied that interview to Deadly Women as well. And then after that was Evil Lives Here. It took a lot longer. It was 2 full days of filming, and it wasn't just me. It was actually my oldest daughter also was interviewed for the program. It just felt like we were able to represent Mom a lot better. And then I think this coming weekend, my Snapped episode shows. It's funny how we're perceived and how the general public views a lot of these programs. Because after being on a couple of them myself, I had people who would reach out to me on social media and just let me know that my mom would be proud of me and that they love what I'm doing, that I'm trying to get the information out there and that they support it. And then I've got people on the flip side who are like, well, Paige was sick and your mom didn't get her help like she needed. So there's a lot of positive and negative about everything. And I just have to keep looking at it as I am doing what I can to educate people. And how that is received is not something I can control, obviously. But I did do, like on Reddit, there was a series of posts where people were asking questions and I just jumped on. I just told them, if you have real respectful questions, I will answer those. And I got a lot of people who took me up on it. A lot of people wanted to know how it felt to get up on the stand and how it felt to see my sister who wouldn't look any of us in the eyes. What was her behavior like in the courtroom? I tried to respectfully answer them as best I could. But you don't know how somebody's going to take any information that's thrown out there at any given time. I just feel like as people who have had to live through a tragedy and have hopefully in their own way come to terms with things and healed somewhat, I think it's important to tell people how you healed. Tell people things that might be beneficial to them to get through the end of a relationship or a relationship that's dangerous, because I just felt like if I could just inform people, maybe more people would be helped. And that's what I've stood by. My whole purpose is to share that my mom was a wonderful, loving, caring person, that she was a wonderful grandmother. She was a great mom to me and to my sisters, but that she also wasn't always very truthful with us about the things that were happening in her life. And that sometimes abuse is something that is hidden and that you may not know about. If you've got a sibling who is basically mooching off of a parent, is living in their household, controlling them, you need to make sure any way you can that you put an end to that. Just trying to make people aware that elder abuse happens. Child-to-parent abuse occurs a lot more frequently than anybody realizes. If you have the ear of anybody in any form of government, if you can talk to them about that, the more people who hear about it, hopefully the more healing that we can get for people who need it.
What tools or resources have helped buoy you in the hardest moments?
I got very heavily involved in church again and met some really amazing ladies. We would all get together and talk about ways to heal and talk about the things that have happened in our lives that were out of our control. So that was a big part of what I did for a number of years. And of course, I was in therapy. And then eventually I learned about EMDR. I think that that was probably the most help that I personally was able to get. Something about it helps you detach from all of the trauma, and it allows you to step back and look at it from afar, as opposed to it being something that you're constantly feeling. Then I would highly recommend that you investigate EMDR and the process. I used to get panic attacks really bad, and this kind of cured me of panic attacks. She helped me deal with trauma of my parents' divorce. I still apparently was traumatized by that. All the trauma with Mom and with Paige. I came out of there just feeling like I was about 100 pounds lighter. Just a lot of baggage was able to be dropped off and left at her door. I feel like it's important that since I have healed fairly well, that it's doubly important that I share my experience and my take on what happened with our family. Whether it's on a podcast like this, or maybe I'll write an article about it someday, I don't know. I would like my mom to be remembered as a giggling girl who was an army brat who got to travel the world with her family, as a woman who married young, yet still during a time when a lot of women didn't go back to school, Mom went back to school and got her education. She was a fantastic mother to her three girls. She was an amazing grandmother to her five grandkids. Mom was just a beautiful old soul. She just loved very fiercely, and she's missed. I think about her every day. I try to honor her. I try to tell my truth and hope it's enough of Mom's truth as well, because there's so many of us out here. If we were all able to kind of put our heads together and had unlimited funds somehow, we could change the world.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
I was really excited about having a sleepover at my friend's house. But when my mom picked me up the next morning, she took me to our house and a bunch of their friends, and my dad was there. And they told us that my dad had been arrested. At the time, we couldn't even be told what the crime was, but it was for child sexual abuse material. I remember them telling us that it had something to do with computers and that dad would be going away. And I remember in that moment, my dad asking for forgiveness before we had even had time to process it. And I did give that forgiveness for him, but not really having an understanding of what was going to happen.
Thank you again to Cash App for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to spend with confidence with the Cash App card today. New Cash App customers can earn $10 if they use the code CASHAPP10 in their profile at signup and send $5 to a friend within 14 days. Terms apply. Download Cash App today and make your money work for you. Visit the link in our episode notes.
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production, co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.